Welcome to the Messy Antics Podcast, a podcast about all things Messianic Judaism. Each episode, we will be sharing our opinions as we tackle some of the biggest issues in Messianic Judaism. Now, here's your hosts, Rabbis Eric, David, Jonathan, and Toby.
So we were just in the middle of a conversation again, pre-recording, and decided to hit the record button. So this, you get another episode of us just kind of spastically rolling with that conversation.
The background recording. The back room.
But every once in a while, we get into, and it's far more than every once in a while, we just get into one of those conversations that afterwards we, you know, 20, 30 minutes later go, man, we should have hit record. That would have been great. And I just felt like this was one of those. So I'm going to let Rabbi Toby and Rabbi Jonathan were actually in the middle of talking about something that was pretty important, and wanted to hit record and dive into that. So I'm going to let you guys get back at it, and then we can go from there.
Yeah, I was saying that, you know, I keep biblical kosher. I'll eat a cheeseburger. So I keep biblical kosher. But if I'm somewhere where, another Jewish person, or Messianic or not, if they're separating those things, you know, I'm going to honor that. Like, I'm not going to. But I was talking to another fellow Messianic Jew in the movement, whom I love very much. You know, this isn't a bad. It wasn't a bad situation, it wasn't a negative interaction.
That's wasn't a confrontation.
No. I was just talking about how I had a neighbor offer me some crawfish over Memorial Day weekend, and they were being so nice and so kind. I didn't want to, not accept it. Right. So I accepted it and took it inside, and I said, you know, and the person I was speaking to said, well, you're not Jewish, right? And I said, no, I'm not. And they said, well, you know, you could have ate it. I mean, they were being nice. They weren't, that's just how they feel. I said, well, you could have ate it. They said, you know, if I weren't Jewish, I would go crazy on that stuff. And I just said, well, I'm just trying to honor, you know, I just want to honor the way of life, you know. And the person said, I understand. I get it, you know. So, you know, and that was, you know, and then you talked about how.
Right. Yeah. For me, it's like, you know, because this is not the first time we've heard about or had these kinds of conversations or interactions.
Because I do disagree with that. I feel like whether you're Jew or Gentile, if you're a Gentile and you're called to the movement, I think you should abide by what God called you to, which is kosher.
Yeah, and that's why, like even at conferences and stuff, like if we're at a conference or at a Messianic Jewish event, and the Jewish thing, the, you know, relating to the Torah is it at a minimum, I mean, I'm like bare minimum, avoiding things like pork and shellfish and catfish and sort of basic stuff. Because again, like you said, like not so much worried about the meat and dairy thing. I mean, we can, like, depending on which community we're in. But like it shouldn't, to me, it shouldn't even be an argument that if you're at a conference, at a Jewish event, like you just kind of are going to eat kosher, you know, and you're going to kind of fold into that community. How it does, Gentile or not, because, like, you know, for example, like if we were having something at Bradam, you know, and we had a bunch of, like, let's say a rabbi's meeting or something, or like a minister's meeting that had, for whatever reason, was more Messianic rabbi heavy than pastor, but we had pastors there, and let's say we went out to eat at a restaurant that offered, you know, a decent menu offering. You know, like you could get things that were definitely not unkosher.
Yeah, you could get chicken or beef.
Get chicken or beef, you know, something that's definitely like, okay, this is definitely like falls within the litmus test of what's clean according to Torah. I would look disdainfully upon, you know, on someone, not in a judgmental way, but like, dude. Read the room. Like if someone's like, I'm gonna get, like, give me the grand slam, the grand bacon slam burger. Like, dude, like, do you, like, we're kind of all. It would be like me going into, like the American, you know, American Vegan Association, and like all of us going out to eat, and everyone getting a salad or a vegetable based dish, and me being like, dude, no, I want the beef stuffed ravioli shells with you know, cream sauce, chicken and shrimp, and it would be uncouth.
It is
at a minimum.
Well, you're not upholding others' above yourself.
Right. Well, and it's, you know, yeah, exactly.
And that's a larger, that's a universal truth.
Yeah.
I think the big thing is I don't want to fall in the rut of, you know, I know we tend to get into that rut with, but I think that that's a, with talking about, you know, the things that Yeshua said, you know, I think recently we talked about when Yeshua was talking about, it's not what goes into a man that defiles him, it's what comes out. And then there's that little addition in some translations of the Bible that he pronounced all foods clean. Right.
Which little italicized
section. He never did that, you know.
Right.
He never pronounced all the foods clean. He never said that was okay. You know, even my dad calls me up, you know, sometimes and gets so upset about interactions he has with people that are in the church. And he just goes, "What is the deal, man?" He goes, "You know, I'm sitting here and some person is eating a ham sandwich and the you know, the subject will come up and the, you know, about, you know, I tell them I don't eat ham and they make a big deal about it and they say, well, Jesus freed us from all that."
Right.
And I was like, and that's a whole thing. It's a bigger issue, you know, because he didn't free us from that. He freed us from sin.
Right.
It's the whole freedom thing. I just don't like, I don't like the, I certainly don't like the attitude that is sometimes prevalent in the church, which is, I'm going to pioneer this perceived freedom I have.
Right.
Because that's just not so important, you know.
Right.
At the same time, I also don't like the attitude that's sometimes prevalent in Messianic Judaism, which is, Gentiles, do what you want, have fun. It's our responsibility as Jews
right.
to maintain this stuff. And my question is, I think it goes back to, as a Gentile in the movement, I think my calling is to provoke the non-believing Jew to jealousy that doesn't accept Messiah.
Right.
The times, the stories I've heard, and you guys, you know, might want to chime in, you know, in my experience, a Jewish person who doesn't accept Yeshua as the Messiah, what provokes them to jealousy is when they see a Gentile doing stuff that they perceive as, wait a minute, this Gentile is wearing a tallit. What am I doing? This Gentile is not eating bacon. What am I doing? And then they want to know, well, why are you doing that? And it's because we want to live in the manner that the Messiah did. And they're like, it just goes back to that. That's why. That's what I would, and for me, for a Messianic Jew to question why I'm following.
Right. In the context of a Messianic Jewish gathering.
I was just thinking about this yesterday before you say something, David. I was just thinking about this. I thought to myself, I said, why do my brothers and sisters that are Jewish in the movement, not all of them, some of them, why are they frustrated when they see, some of them, not all of them, some of them love it. Like you got, like, you know, Rabbi Eric, Rabbi David.
Right.
They love to see this. Why do some get bothered by Gentiles wanting to do this stuff when God said it's Zechariah happening? It means that the biblical formula that God said would happen is happening, which is the nations are coming mm-hmm. to be a part
yeah.
of God through the ways of the Jew, right?
Yeah, you know, there's a couple of things that just really bother me about the way we do things in Messianic Judaism sometimes.
Antics.
The antics, hence messy antics. And one of those is that we have a really bad, and I talked about this in our study at CMC on the One New Man, and that will at some point become a book, I'm hoping, this year.
Shameless plug there
that,
for that.
Well, it's hard to plug something that doesn't exist yet, but
but it's coming.
But it's, in theory. And so the we have this tendency to want to gatekeep things. Right, and we're like, okay, well, Gentiles aren't required to live Torah out, so you don't have to. You can do whatever you want; it doesn't matter. But us Jews, we're required to, and this is our thing, and you better not come and take our thing away from us. And it drives me nuts because it's number one, it's not fair, right? Because if God is calling, I had this conversation with somebody a while back. If who are we to say that a calling that God has put on somebody's heart? That they don't have a right to follow that they don't have a right to interact and live that out. And you know, the pastor talking about Zechariah actually just posted that this morning, that verse. But in Zechariah 2, verse 14 says, "Sing and rejoice, O daughter of Zion, for behold, I am coming, and I will live among you, It is a declaration of Adonai. In that day, many nations will join themselves to Adonai, and they will be my people, and I will dwell among you. Then you will know that Adonai Tzevaot has sent me to you. Right? So it is through the connectivity of the nations to the Messianic Jewish community, Messianic Jewish movement, and being involved in the reality of living out a scriptural observance of, and that's, again, that we've said it time and time again, there are distinctions. This is not to eliminate the distinction of Jew and Gentile. This is, right. There are aspects of the Torah that are legitimately for, you know, we'll just deal with the simple one, the physical circumcision. Right. That is an obligation. Relationally, covenantally, for Jewish people, it is not a covenantal obligation for non-Jews. That doesn't mean non-Jews can't participate in it, mm-hmm. so long as they understand that it doesn't make them Jewish, right? Mm-hmm. Right? In the same sense that me coming to faith in Jesus doesn't make me not Jewish anymore, right? And so there are distinctions, but that doesn't mean that there isn't opportunity to participate. And this is one of the things that you said with somebody recently. I think it may have been at the same event, at the same conference, that somebody had said something. Oh no, it was you were talking about wearing tzitzit with somebody the summer conference, and they said, "Oh, well, are you Jewish?" He says, "No, I'm not." And he goes, "Well, so do you think Gentiles are obligated to do that?" And Toby goes, "No, I don't think they're obligated, but I think we're permitted. I think we have ability."
He asked me, he says, "Do you think Gentiles should be encouraged?" And I said, "Not necessarily encouraged. That's not to say I wouldn't encourage." I said, that depends. He goes, okay, I don't believe they should be encouraged. And I said, well, that's fine. I respect that. I said, I don't think they should be prohibited.
Right.
I don't think they should be prohibited. I said, I have a problem when we start prohibiting anyone. You know, now, it's one thing. It's you got to get to the why. Now, it's one thing when a Gentile starts saying they're Jewish. This is going to make me Jewish.
Right.
That's a problem. They need to be taught all that. But what I told the guy, you know, and again, a great guy. We had a great conversation. He's a good dude.
And he was totally cool with your perspective.
Yeah. He said, okay, I can see that. And I was like, okay, good. Okay. Well, that's, you know, I just don't want to be told, well, you don't have to do that. Or you shouldn't be doing that.
Right.
Because that's for Jewish people for their unique relationship. And that's where I have a problem. It's the prohibition.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was thinking about this as you guys were talking that. A lot of people don't pay attention to the fact that in Acts 15, the list of four things that Gentiles, the Shilachim, the apostles, clearly said, these four things we're going to ask Gentiles to do. And three of those things are food prohibitions.
Right.
They're instructed not to eat things strangled, not to eat blood, and not to eat things offered to idols, which were all food prohibitions.
Yeah.
And it's interesting that when we discussed this, the understanding that there was a requirement for cleanliness, which is what those prohibitions were about, so that Jews and non-Jews could fellowship because of the God's commandments concerning cleanliness and physical cleanliness and spiritual cleanliness. And it had to do with kosher food items or things that would be considered kosher. That one of the reasons kosher food is kosher is because the blood is removed from it. They're not to have the blood, not to eat things strangled, are the significant difference between kosher butchered meat and non-kosher butchered meat. Is that the blood is drained out of the kosher animal.
Before it's taken apart.
Right. Yeah. So this is definitely talking about Gentiles being required to keep a significant portion of the kosher laws. Now, we can extrapolate that would also consist of not eating unclean fish animals and seafood and birds and things. But definitely we're talking about the apostles laying down the law for Gentiles to at least abide by these particular cleanliness laws,
which
had to do with food.
Yeah, within the context of Jewish community.
The community, yeah. But then, and to go on, it's amazing to me, I've been to places where in a Messianic community, a Messianic event, a Messianic conference, where they were very, very, very strict about not having pork, not having shellfish, not, you know, separating milk and meat, the whole thing. But then they went out to eat at a halal restaurant And halal restaurants, the food that's prepared in a halal restaurant has been offered to idols. They actually say a prayer offering that meat to Allah as part of their ritual slaughter. So it amazes me. We will be so inconsistent in doing things. We'll tell non-Jews, okay, you don't have to keep kosher, when there's at least an aspect that the apostles put as incumbent upon Gentiles dealing with kosher food. But then we'll be so nitpicky but so concerned about eating kosher in the things we do, but then go to a place that violates no foods offered to idols.
And it's funny to me that, like, in some of those events where that will happen, the intentional separation of meat and dairy, you have a meat mill and you have a dairy mill at a different part in the day or whatever, the intentional division of the meat and dairy mills is typically one, because it's the least common denominator, and there are those that are very intentional about it. And so rather than, again, like we said earlier, rather than creating offense, we go with the least common denominator.
Right.
This is something, it's as somebody who isn't real particular about separation of meat and dairy, it also doesn't hurt my feelings to have a hamburger without cheese on it.
Right.
So it's easier for me to have a hamburger without cheese on it than it is for somebody who is very intentional on faithfully maintaining a separation of meat and dairy to like stomach the idea of having a cheeseburger. And I get that, and I'm cool with that. But
at least we can do.
Yeah. But at the same time, one of the big hangups is that I think part of the problem, this goes back to kind of what Rabbi Toby was saying about being, you know, it's not that we necessarily encourage or should encourage Gentiles to keep Torah, but we also shouldn't, like, prohibit them from doing so. Like, I'm fervent about, it's not my job to go into churches and tell them, hey, there's this whole, you know, section of the Bible that you've just completely ignored that has a whole lot of things that could make your walk with the Lord easier if you did this. Like, that's not my job. My job's not to go and do that.
Right.
When I'm invited to speak in churches, I come and I share whatever topic they've asked me to or direction they've asked. I deal with that and that alone. I'm not there to try and recruit or sheep steal or create whatever. But if a Gentile comes into a Messianic community and they're there and they're plugged and they're legitimately devoted to that. Like, we have people in our congregation that are not Jewish that have been part of our congregation for 6, 7, 8, 11 years or longer. You guys have had people that are part of your congregation that aren't Jewish that have been here almost since day one, you know, almost 30 years ago.
Yeah.
Right? There are people that when they say they are devoted to Messianic Judaism, to this covenantal life, they mean it. Right? It's a part of who they are. They're not trying to be Jewish. They're trying to be authentic to who they are in Messianic Judaism. And so to that end, in a Messianic synagogue, and I will say that I think it's only within a healthy, authentic Messianic community that Gentiles should be striving to practice trying to live out Torah. Now, if somebody doesn't have access to that and they're trying to do it in their own life, in their own home, and they're trying, that's a different story. But I'm talking in the terms of communal living, and a Messianic community is the one place that I would say, this is where that's probably a great place for it.
Right.
Because you're going to learn the ins and outs of it properly, and you're going to have a healthy respect. A lot of times it's when it's trying to be done separate from Messianic Judaism that you end up with the problems that Messianic Judaism is afraid of.
Right.
That oh, well, we're, you know, taking over for the Jews, or we're this, or we're that, or we're now Jewish, or we're – that's not how it works.
Or it becomes like just cosplaying.
Yeah, exactly.
Jewishness.
Which is a term that I just saw somebody use recently that was kind of funny, the Messianic Jewish cosplay.
Jewish cosplay, yeah.
I love – one of my favorite things – and again, my dad called me about this. He'll call me sometimes with Bible stuff, and he has been reading Galatians chapter 2, which is actually one of the most significant moments in the New Testament, which is where Paul describes his confrontation with Peter in Antioch.
Yeah.
Which basically what was happening is you had you know, Paul was talking about how he was accepted among the other apostles, which to me, I think is such a big deal. He talks about, you know, we shook hands, and I was like, wow, what a moment.
I mean, he gives us creds. You know?
You know, Paul and Peter shake hands, and, you know, Peter says, you know, I'm going to the Jews. Paul's going to go to the Gentiles. And then he said, But then things go south because at this, you know, they're having this gathering, and Peter's eating with the Gentiles until believers, these are other believers, Jewish believers from the circumcision show up, and Peter literally, as I mentioned in a teaching, like he at school, he grabs his tray and gets up. Like he literally withdraws, and man, Paul goes, and this is what Paul says, what I love. He says, but when I saw that they were not walking in line with the truth of the gospel.
Right.
And, you know, he rebukes Peter, and, and there's so much to unpack with that confrontation. There's so much to unpack. But he says, yet we know that a person is not set right by deeds based on Torah. A person.
Right.
Which means, I'm not saying that Jews should just let go of the Torah, or non-Messianic Gentiles, you know, non-Jews. I'm saying, though, when a Jewish person tells me, you don't have to do that stuff, my response is, you don't either. I mean,
yeah,
everyone's set right by faith in the Messiah, you know? So the question is, why are we doing these things?
Right.
Because I don't have to wear tzitzits, but neither does the Jew. You know, we're set right, not by a deed of the Torah. I'm not set right by putting on the tzitzits. I put them on because when I look at them, I remember who I belong to. You know, that's why, not because I think God is now happy with me that I put these things on. But what I'm saying is that Paul is saying that, it's like Paul is saying, Peter's not set right. Jacob's not set right because they're circumcised, you know, physically. I just love, that is such, there's so much to unpack with that confrontation.
Yeah, I think that a part of the conversation needs to be the difference between, and I mentioned this the other day at our synagogue. In Christianity, largely people talk in terms of saved and unsaved. In Judaism, we talk in terms of in covenant and out of covenant. Mm-hmm. And those are different things. And when you enter into a covenant, whether you're Jewish or non-Jewish, God established his covenant. So he established the constitution of the kingdom.
Right.
Okay. And just like when somebody comes to the United States, when my grandparents came to the United States from Hungary, they became citizens of the United States. Now, they were still Hungarian. They were their genetics didn't change. Their genealogy didn't change. But their relationship to the constitution changed. Now they were governed by U.S. law, and they started acting like citizens of the United States. They paid their taxes in the United States. They did the same thing covenantally. When God established a covenant for Israel, that covenant was for Jewish people and non-Jewish people. They were both at Sinai when the covenant was established.
Right.
And so when you enter into covenant, then you start to apply those covenantal, constitutional precepts to your life, depending on who you are and what you are. If you're male, female, a soldier, not a soldier, a government official, a lawyer, a king, a priest, whatever you are, the applicable covenant responsibilities become yours.
Right.
And so when you become a citizen of the United States, then you start your appearance in some ways changes. You start wearing the clothing of United States citizens. If you're from Scotland, you don't wear a kilt over here often. You start wearing the clothing of the United States. Now, it doesn't make you not Scotch,
right?
Or Scottish.
Scottish, yeah.
But it does make you American, and it's the same way with us when we enter covenantally into God's covenant. It's not about us. It's about him.
Right.
And about us aligning with his covenant that he opened to us.
I want to actually backtrack for just a second.
To the Scotch?
No.
Although I will gladly backtrack to some Scotch if you have some.
I was fighting the urge to say you are what you drink. But I want to backtrack for a second, though, to what some of the Rabbi Toby was talking on when he was bringing up Galatians 2 and Peter eating with Gentiles, and then some from Jacob's crew show up, and he kind of backs away and stops relating with them. And it's really important to note that in the text there, It says that he separated himself from the Gentiles out of fear of what Jacob's crew would think.
Right.
Not that Jacob's crew ever said anything to him.
Right.
Not that they ever came in and gave him problems. And it doesn't say that Jacob's crew kept themselves separate from them.
Right.
It just says that out of fear of what they might think, he separated himself. So that when Paul confronts the hypocrisy, as the TLV headlines it, when Paul confronts the hypocrisy that he sees in what Peter is doing, Peter's hypocrisy is based in fear of what others might think,
right.
Not based in the reality of what others said or in the reality of what God even said. It's solely based in the fear of what others might think,
yeah.
Right? And I think that's one of the key components to the what I called earlier the kind of gatekeeping within Messianic Judaism,
right.
of our relationship to Torah, specifically for Gentiles, is, well, if all of these Gentiles are doing this, then what is the traditional Jewish world going to think? If they come into our congregations and we've got 100 people in our congregation and 30 or 40 of them are Jewish, but everybody's wearing a tallis and a kippah and everybody is doing, what are these non-believing Jews going to think? And the truth is that Jewish tradition and Jewish theological opinion about the Messiah tells us what they should be thinking, which is the nations are doing our stuff. Maybe the Messiah has come.
Yeah.
Right? And that was the whole thing with that Zechariah 2 passage, Zechariah 2, 14, 15, is that's speaking of the Messiah, right? When God himself dwells among us, that's the Messiah. When the Messiah comes and God is dwelling among us, the nations will come and become a part of who we are.
Right.
And when that happens, then everyone else will see God is with us, right? And so...
Yes.
When we talk about this idea, what I keep referencing is gatekeeping, because I think it's a really important term and to recognize that that's what we're doing, in fact. It's not based out of what others actually think. It's based out of what our fears of what others might think. Much like Peter separated from the Gentile believers, not out of what Jacob's guys said, because Jacob wasn't even there. It doesn't say he was there. It says some guys from Jacob's crew came over.
Right.
And I think now I've got West Side Story in my head, like Jacob's crew comes over snapping in. And
well, it's interesting that and Peter was, and I'm just again basing this of course basing it on scripture, but Peter was without excuse, and the reason why was because, and I do think the timing's interesting. Yeshua initially was like, don't go the way of the Gentiles.
Right.
But that's God's pattern. Right. Everything went through the Jew first. The Jewish people are his firstborn.
Right.
Salvation is from the Jews.
Right.
God chose Israel to be a light to the nations.
Right.
So Yeshua, his first disciples were Jewish. And then the ancillary disciples that came through the disciples initially were Jewish. It's when he resurrected, it was like Yeshua didn't just resurrect and say, okay, I'll be back. He says, go and make disciples of all nations.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really the only instruction he gives. I feel bad for the early apostles in Acts, because a part of me, I think if I were there, I'd be like, man, why didn't Yeshua just tell us what to do with them?
Yeah. So I want to hit on that for a second too, because when we talk about, often believers talk about Paul being the shaliach, the emissary, the apostle sent to the nations, as though he was the first and only one that did that. But yet Peter was the first one that God used to bring the nations to faith through Cornelius and Acts 10 and so on.
Yeah.
And I think we look at that a lot of times because Yeshua said, I've come for the lost sheep of the house of Israel. We look at that and immediately just assume he only ministered to Jews. But when we actually read the gospel, I know, God forbid we actually read the word of God, but if we actually read the Gospels, we see that he spent a significant amount of time in Syria ministering to people there. Some were Jewish, some weren't. And it specifically tells us that there were some that came to follow him that weren't. We see that he spent a significant portion of time ministering to the Samaritans, which generations back had some direct connection to Judaism, and they follow some bastardized form of Judaism even today. But the reality is that the Samaritans were the best case scenario derivative of Judaism. They, at that point in time, and especially today, there wasn't as direct a connection genealogically to the Jewish people. It would be easy to say that when Ezra and Nehemiah come back and the Jerusalem's being rebuilt, the temple's being rebuilt, there's a section where it says that there were those that couldn't prove where their family was connected to, and so they weren't able, with the Levites or whatever, they weren't able to participate in the way that everybody else could. That really is the qualification the Samaritans would have fallen in that point in time. So the traditional Jewish world of the day, the Pharisees, Sadducees, Essenes, and such, didn't consider them to be Jewish in the extent of what they were. But there was this recognition that they were derivative of.
Right.
And so, but they were considered considered nations. They were considered Gentile. They weren't considered Jewish. And so it's still today in Israel, if a Samaritan person who follows Samaritan Judaism converts to the, in order to be considered Jewish, they have to convert to Orthodox Judaism or to religious Judaism in Israel. They can't maintain Samaritan Jewish practices and be considered Jewish. And so the same is true. We see that Yeshua ministered to the Samaritans, which were considered Gentile, a significant amount of time. We see that he ministered in Syria and so on. So yes, his primary objective was the Jewish people, and his primary audience following him were Jews, but there were also a mixed multitude that were along with that. I just think it's a really beautiful right. picture that we see that mixed multitude imagery throughout Scripture.
Right. Yeah, I find it interesting, going back to what Rabbi Toby was talking about just a few minutes ago, because he mentioned the commission, which was to go make disciples. And again, this goes back to that covenant, the idea of covenant or non-covenant versus saved and unsaved, because when somebody comes to faith in Messiah, they become redeemed, but that's the beginning of them becoming disciples. And disciple comes from the same word we get discipline from, which goes back to Acts 15, where they talk about these four things are required of a Gentile, for they will hear Moses taught in synagogue every Shabbat. So the discipling happens when they're part of the community,
right,
and they're hearing the word of God. So they're being disciplined, they're being educated, they're growing, they're maturing in their faith. So when you enter into covenant, you're at a starting point, but then as you become mature, as you are discipled, then you're going to apply more of the covenantal responsibilities to your life, because you understand you're growing up, you're going from milk to meat, you're getting stronger in the Lord. The other thing I wanted to say, because we haven't said it so far, is we did talk about that there are those that keep biblical kosher versus those that keep lot kosher or rabbinic kosher. And I want to say, none of us are against anybody keeping rabbinic kosher or glot kosher or separating milk and meat and those things. If that's their conviction, then people should follow the convictions they have concerning doing what I would say is more than the minimum. Mm-hmm. If the minimum is the plain text, and there are rabbinic traditions or cultural traditions or whatever that go beyond that, and you feel led to follow the more than, great, do that. If that's how the Spirit is leading you, then obey the Spirit and do that. And you will never hear us mocking, condemning, coming against somebody mm-hmm. who does more than the minimum.
Yeah.
But I want to make it clear that there's a difference between doing more than the minimum because of a personal conviction mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. looking at the commandments of God as if we have the option to have a personal conviction about them.
Right.
In other words, if God's word says, thou shalt not commit adultery,
right.
then it really doesn't matter if you're personally convicted against it or not. It's still wrong
right.
to commit adultery. So when we're talking about the minimums, when God said, you shall do this, you won't do that, those are the plain text minimums that we should align ourselves with as we mature. As we get further into covenant, we'll find more and more things that we'll look at and say, I desire to follow stronger, deeper into God's covenant, so I'm making the choice to align my life and my actions with that. But those aren't things that are just convictions that we can say, well, I'm not convicted against idolatry, so right. I'm not going to do that. Or I'm not convicted against drunkenness, so I'm not going to do that. Or right. any of those things. Yeah. So we encourage people, all of us encourage people, to live out their convictions beyond whatever the minimum is. But we also encourage everybody to at least learn the minimums, learn what God's Torah actually says, and then align yourself into that covenant. And we know that that's a growth process,
right.
that everybody's at different levels in their walk. Some are brand new, some have been around for a while, but even some of the ones that have been around for a while may not have exercised in that direction to where they gained the understanding mm-hmm. or the depth that they would to have that. So we're all at different levels.
And right. and with that, I want to add, if you come into a Messianic congregation, and whether you're Jewish or not, if you come into a Messianic Jewish congregation with no connection to the Torah, right, nobody's expecting that on day one you're going to flip your entire life upside down and do everything that it says. And look, the fact of the matter is, if you come in on day one and think you somehow miraculously, magically figured it all out, right, you're probably substantially wrong.
Right.
And like you're going to make it all a mess.
Download.
Yeah, yeah. And you're going to make it all a mess. Like, we have people at CMC. I've got people at CMC that have been with us for years that are totally on board with Messianic Judaism, wholeheartedly believe in Messianic Judaism, but they don't believe that they are supposed to keep Torah, or at least certain aspects. Like, they show up on Shabbat, and that's awesome. Right. But you know, they don't feel like they there's a necessity for them to keep kosher. And I tell them very point blank every time they bring it up to me, I'm not the kosher police. I'm not the Shabbat police. That's not my job. Right. My job is to shepherd. My job is to teach, to instruct, to nourish, etc. My job is not to come to your house to verify that you're doing things right and that your schedule is aligned right and that your dietary situation, your pantry is okay. It's not my job. That's between you and God. You figure out that on your own. But I'm going to teach you what the Word says. I'm going to teach you what the Lord puts on my heart to share with the community. And if you're here and you're comfortable being here and being a part of our congregation and not doing those things, that's great. So long as Jonathan was saying earlier, as Rabbi Jonathan was saying earlier, so long as when you're in the community and you're doing community things, like if we do a cookout at the synagogue, don't show up with, you know, the
pork ribs,
pork ribs
for the barbie.
or yes, pork andouille sauces to throw on the grill, you know, which is also why we generally provide all the food, so we don't have to worry about
right.
it. But that's a whole other story. Like, don't show up with these things trying to make a mess. Or to try and prove a point either, you know. And so, like, we've had people that have showed up with a few years ago, somebody showed up trying to be nice. They were trying to be really sweet, and they thought it would be nice if they showed up early before service and brought a couple of dozen donuts to share. They went and bought them and wanted to share and be a blessing, whatever. And
the maple bacon,
yeah,
donut.
several of them were maple bacon whatever donuts, and we were like, we're going to take that out now. And it was like, we weren't rude about it. We weren't. It was like, hey, we appreciate it. No, I know where the heart was. I know. Now, right. in fairness, it wasn't like they ordered them. They just ordered a mixed dozen, and
right,
that was what
right,
they were
right,
given.
Right.
They didn't think about it. But nonetheless, we were like, hey, yeah, we appreciate the generosity. We appreciate the heart behind it. But we're not going to be able to do that here. So I appreciate it. We're not trying to, like, you know, poop on your parade or anything like that. We thoroughly appreciate the heart right. intention behind it. But we cannot use it here.
Right.
And we've had, when we did potluck for Oneg, which we don't do anymore. We just provide food. When we did potluck for Oneg, we had people that would show up with stuff. I mean, it wasn't a regular occurrence. Maybe three times in the course of 7 or 8 years of us doing potluck Onegs that they would show up with something that was either questionable and we didn't, like, want to question, or that we knew had something that wasn't supposed to be there, and we would just gently pick it up and move it, and then we would talk with them later and say, hey, you know, separate, like, I'm a big fan of you correct in private, you praise in public,
right?
And so it was always, hey, you know, nobody's around, let's talk for just a second, listen, we appreciate it, but here, have, you know, bring this to somebody, whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, and it makes me think of, you know, when Rabbi David just said, you know, we understand the heart of things.
Right.
I just want to say, too, that, you know, last night we had our Bible study and we went over the Matthew 5 as portion of the Sermon on the Mount, for lack of a better term. And everybody knows the don't think I've come to abolish the law or the prophets, right? And you know, and David talked about how he goes, it's for some Messianic Jews and Gentiles, it's their favorite scripture to go attack the church with.
Right.
But I want to kind of come at it from another angle. I was watching these two people the other day on YouTube. One was an Orthodox Jew, the other was a pastor, and they had a really, by the way, these two guys had such a beautiful, respectful debate, and both of them didn't budge on what they believed. But what the Orthodox Jew said is, you know, when we talk about, you know, obeying God from the heart and having the right heart and stuff, he goes, and Christians who I talk to are always like, well, it's about the heart. It's about the heart. He goes, obeying God from the heart with being sincerely genuine. He goes, that is not a Jesus thing or a New Testament thing. He goes, that's a Judaism thing. And it is, because even Moses said to Israel, as early as Moses, circumcise your heart.
Right.
You know, Moses was saying, I'm teaching you all these things, but if your heart's not circumcised, there's not going to be any power in what you're doing.
Right.
And I just think it's interesting that, and honestly, for me, listening, you know, to these two guys, when the Orthodox Jew said, well, you know, when people tell me that Jesus had this new idea about obeying Torah, he said, obeying from the heart is a very Jewish thing. I'm like, right. That's, do you listen to what you're saying? Yeshua, you know, Jesus is, it was not, when he said, don't think I've come to abolish the law, he wasn't saying, I'm canceling the law out and I'm doing a new thing.
Yeah.
He right. was, there were many people, even in Yeshua's day, that were teaching, obey from the heart. John the Baptist was one, Yochanan the Immerser. He was, right. there were plenty of people. It's not what was being said, but it was who was saying it, you know?
Right, it goes all the way back to the V'ahavta. V'ahavta, yeah. Adonai Elokecha, b'chol levavcha, with all your heart, and you shall teach these with all your heart. And it's always been, contrary to popular belief, Judaism was not an external religion that became an internal religion with the right. coming of Yeshua. Judaism has always been about, you shall love the Lord your God mm-hmm. with all your heart, and with all your soul, yep. and with all you have.
Yep. So, real quick question. John the Baptist, legit, like flat out, do you think he was part of First Baptist, Second Baptist, oh, Bethany Baptist?
Primitive
Ebenezer Baptist. Baptist. Oh, no.
I only said that because if I say you
No, no, I knew what you meant. Yeah.
It might go over somebody's head.
Yeah, so. No, I knew what you meant. I mean, I usually will say it in Hebrew and then go, nobody's going to know that, and I'll repeat it in English right. the way people know right. it because it's the reality. Yeah, I mean, yeah.
anyone
yeah.
that dresses in camel's hair out in the desert and eats the way he eats, there's that's yeah. primitive.
Yeah. There's a lot to unpack.
Creepy John, yeah. as they say in The Chosen.
Yeah, you can't, like, Rabbi Eric said, you can't look at these things like they're external and we're just doing them.
Yeah.
And there were plenty of Pharisees and guys that were doing that in Yeshua's day. I think, unfortunately, and I do think it's heavy on the church side, they seem to think that every Jew that was walking the earth during Yeshua's day was doing that. Mm-hmm. And there were some that were doing that, but there were many, like I think Nicodemus is a perfect example of Yeshua was working with him because he right. truly loved God.
Right.
Right, it's almost as if some church people, and I'm not knocking all church people, but some church people look at the believers before the disciples mm-hmm. as if they had a checklist that they walk around with every day, and they you know, every time they were getting ready to do something, they looked at the rules and regulations to right. see if this was an acceptable or not. Instead of, I'm putting my word in your heart that you'll follow it. That you'll do.
Or that everyone was walking around as, you know, ostentatious hypocrites all the time.
Yeah, and it comes back to what I was saying when I was referring to what was Yeshua doing? What was Yeshua saying mm-hmm. in my opinion, that there's a lot he's saying in the Sermon on the Mount. There's a lot to unpack, but he's not saying, I'm coming to end Judaism and start something new.
Right.
He was telling them, in my opinion, I am the culmination yeah. of what Judaism is.
Right.
I'm the culmination. And he still is. He didn't.
Right.
He didn't end. He didn't cancel it out like a fraction, like you right. know, cancel out your twos or cancel out the common.
Yeah.
He was coming as the ultimate expression of what God began in Genesis 1.
Right.
And I think that Rabbi Toby, Rabbi Eric, both said two separate things that tie in together that kind of really surmise this entire discussion. And realistically, any discussion about anything we try to do biblically in our lives. And that is that Rabbi Toby asked the question, why? What is the why? Why are you wanting, if you're wanting to keep kosher, what's the why? Are you doing it because you think it'll make you look more Jewish? Are you doing it because you think it like earns you brownie points in heaven? What's the why, right? Why are you doing it? That what's the purpose? And then the thing that Rabbi Eric said was that Judaism has always been about the heart, right?
Right.
It wasn't an external that. Now, there were practitioners of Judaism that Yeshua, you know, dealt with. Some of the Pharisees he called hypocrites because they were practitioners of Judaism on the outside only.
Right. Right.
And the inside was still a wreck, right? But Judaism itself has always been about the heart. The love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength. Give him everything that you have, right? It's always been about the heart. And we actually, there's a term that we use for kavanah, right? The kavanah talev, the intention of the heart. What is the intention of the heart? And I think those two things tie together, right? The why, what is the intention of the heart? Is the intention of the heart because you think you're earning something with God if you do these things? Or is the intention of the heart solely out of obedience to covenant faithfulness to the Lord because of what God's already done? I always say, out of everything that God's done for me, out of everything that was provided in the blood atonement of Messiah, the very least I can do is to honor what was asked of me.
Yeah, yeah, as we get ready, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I just think it's a good point because if you notice, it just hit me. Which is, that's why I love the Word of God, because everything, it's like always new. But what right. I'm saying is that when Yeshua was asked, what's the most important commandment? It wasn't, oh, obey God. It was love God. And this is the Yeshua was the word of God in the flesh. And he's saying, what I want is to be loved by my creation.
Right.
Not I want to be obeyed because I want to feel like God. And I'm in charge here. That God knew he was God before when the earth was formless. So what I'm saying is, when the earth was formless and void and nothing, it says the Spirit of God hovered. And I just look at that as God. He's like, I'm God.
Right.
I don't need you to worship me. I want you to love me.
Right.
Yeah, and so as we wrap up this episode, I wanted to make a statement that kind of encapsulates some of what we've said, and that is that it's just as wrong for a non-Jewish person to keep Torah in order to be Jewish as it is for a Jewish person to keep Torah just because they're Jewish.
Oh, wow.
In other words, if you're keeping the Torah because you have a genetic connection, a genealogical responsibility, rather than a heart desire to serve God, then you're doing it for the wrong reason. And if you're non-Jewish and you keep Torah because you think somehow that's going to make you Jewish, you're doing it for the wrong reason.
Right.
But if you're Jewish or non-Jewish and you're keeping Torah because of a covenantal connection of your heart to God's heart, then you're doing it for the right reason.
If these weren't Rabbi Toby's microphones, I'd say that was necessary for a mic drop to happen afterwards. But I'm not going to do that to him, so we're just going to let it be a theoretical mic drop. So with that said, we appreciate you guys joining us today and listening to very literally our random meandering at the beginning that ended up going somewhere, I think, really awesome. And we hope that it was as much a blessing for you as it was for us. I think half these conversations are more cathartic on our end. Processing through some of these things and being able to dialogue on them. So we hope they're a blessing to you. And we will see you guys next time.
Thank you for listening to the Messy Antics Podcast. Make sure to subscribe so you can be notified every time we drop a new episode. And be sure to follow and interact with us on social media at Messy Antics Podcast.